Hi, I'm Kyle Barton, and on this 372nd episode of the MWA podcast, Sean Wisniewski and myself visit with Meredith Hart, an outstanding designer, professional furniture maker, and instructor. So welcome to the show, Meredith.
Hello, thank you.
Fantastic. I think we had your lesser half, Evan, on a few episodes ago, so it's great to be catching up with you. And before we talk about the amazing work that Meredith's doing, let's dip our toes in the woodworking news. Yeah. Not a lot this week, but I did want to give a shout out to Lost Art Press. Chris is warming up the engines to the Anarchist Gift Guide. So probably by the time this episode publishes, there will probably already be a few posts on the gift guide. So, you know, these are always great. It's always relatively inexpensive tools, sometimes downright cheap tools that Chris has found that work extremely well for him. And he shares that with us so we can, you know, get stocking stuffers for our fellow woodworkers or just hoard all the tools for ourselves, which is usually what I do. But anyway, and he also had a stealth announcement about some new tools. The Crucible tool is prototyping. One's going to be a sliding bevel and then a waist apron. So he said those should be out in 2022.
So are the full-on smock style shop aprons going out of style and we're going to a waist apron? Or is this...
I guess so. I mean, I have, I guess what was called a nail apron from Jason Thigpen, Texas Heritage Woodworks. And I have one of those that I use all the time, and that's great. And, you know, because I, you know, in my climate, I can't wear a full vest.
Oh, and I'm uncomfortable. Yeah. I've got
a full apron, should I say.
I've got a wood whisperer apron, and I hang it. It hangs on a nail in the corner, and I know exactly where my tape measure and pencil are because I put them in those little pouches, but it's rarely actually on me.
Yes.
I guess it might just cut down on, you know, dusty clothing, you know, but that's it's a little warm just to have that on. I guess I'm just not used to it.
Yeah. And if you're in a climate like mine or yours, where Meredith is from, I'm sure it's a little.
Yeah. I mean, in the winter, it's nice because our AC is or our heat is OK, but it's not.
But not great.
Yeah. So then I'll put on like anything. I have a onesie even, so.
Oh, well that's fantastic.
Yeah.
You need to look into one of those.
It's pretty nice. It really locks in the heat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just didn't get that cold here. Well, it did last year, but that was unusual.
Where are you?
I'm in the Gulf Coast of Texas, about an hour south of Houston.
Gosh, yeah, that sounds very warm.
Yeah, near Galveston. So
I visited them in Galveston. January, and it was about 60.
Oof.
So, to give you an idea. I'm in Northwest Ohio, so I know what something like winter.
Yeah.
But that's ain't no winter down where Kyle is.
Yeah. Exactly.
Balmy.
So. But anyway, so if you want to check that out, head over to Lost Art Press and you can check out their blog and see all the fun stuff they have there.
Heck yeah, do that. And I wanted to add something in. It wasn't in the notes, but and just a kind of fun thing. Friend of the show, host on another show, Matt Cremona. If you know him, you know him. If you don't, go look him up. He's a fun guy. He's a younger guy. You know, well, I can say he's young because he's younger than me. But I... you know, he, you know, years ago, whatever, he made this gigantic, his own sawmill. Fine. Now he has plans. He sells a sawmill. They buy a new house and now he's doing a freaking addition on his house. The kid just can't stop doing stuff. I don't think he sleeps. I don't think he slows down. He does have lovely children, lovely wife. They have a lovely family, but holy crap, if it wasn't enough, he's like doing his own, like, he's posting about like forming up the footings for the foundation for the addition. Like that stuff I'd love to do, but I don't have the time for that. It's just, I'm a little jealous, but it's also pretty impressive.
And what it looked like he moved at least four, maybe 5 feet of earth to get down to the, I guess, down deep enough to lay the foundation. That was quite impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he had to take out, there was a generator in the corner of where he is. Also, some sort of bath that he yanked out with a excavator. Mm-hmm. Or like a pond or whatever that was concrete that was impressively, you know, lifted right out of the ground. And then, I mean, he's at this point, like current date, he's getting ready for putting the wall forms in, but it's super cool. That's going to be a probably a few months long progress, you know, process to what they're doing. And knowing that he's up in is he Minnesota? I think he's Minnesota, Wisconsin, something up there.
Minnesota.
Winter's approaching quickly, so it'll be very interesting to watch what they have to go through to make that. But look up Matt Cremona. He's a good guy. That's my that's my news of the day.
Sounds like he has a lot of energy. Like
he does. He does. It's amazing. We had him.
Some people really do.
Yeah, we met him at a Woodworking in America, recorded a small segment with him at a table outside of the classrooms in the hall there back in probably 2012, maybe 2013. And at that time, I think he was in his early 20s. He was young. I don't even think he was married yet. Like, it's kind of funny to have seen him kind of grown along, you know, just kind of watching from the sidelines in my part, but really, really cool, cool guy. So, worth the follow. Go check him out.
I will.
Matt Cremona. He's a good guy.
Fantastic. Well, so do we have a Patreon shout out this week?
We sure do. And, you know, we always like to give a big thank you to our patrons on Patreon. Today, we're going to go give a big crisp high five to Sean Nichols. Thank you, Sean, for your although I don't agree with how you spell your name. Thank you for your support. And just a reminder out there, if you would like to help us out, we're not asking you to put clothes on our back, but help the show run a little bit. For the low cost of as little as $2 a month, that is less than that cup of coffee.
It's even lower than that. It's $1.99.
$1.99. See, less than $2. I said it. You just go to patreon.com/MWA podcast and you can help support us there.
Fantastic. Well, let's move on to what's in the shop. So, Sean, what are you working on?
Nothing, man. I'm busy.
Hey.
This is my MO. So I got to walk in a parade on Sunday. That's always fun. It's
good.
A short parade. It's like a mile long. It's just a fall thing in the town we live in, you know, whatever. But my sons are in the band. Last year, my son was a drum major, you know, fun stuff. And got to have a pumpkin donut and a pumpkin beer. Good times. But I really, what I've been working on mentally, I'm not overtaken with, not like berated by, but I'm seeing a lot of chair making going on. Thank you, Kyle, for getting all these chair makers on our podcast that I'm following on Instagram. It's infiltrated my life, and I have the biggest hankering to build a chair right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to take a class. And I actually, this morning, I literally, this is me. I woke up this morning and I looked up Greg Pennington's school.
Right.
And saw, it's just shy of an 8-hour drive. Okay. And like looking through the logistics of just the distance it might be to get to a decent school. But I'm inching my way that way. And then I look at my house and go, where the hell would I put a winter chair? Even the simplest, just ladder back, I don't know where it would fit, but it might be more comfortable than the chair I'm sitting in right now. So
there you go. Yep. I'm
that's
sitting
the
in the
problem we have too. Sorry.
Yes.
No.
Exactly.
So it's like anything that comes in, we're gonna have to remove something else at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my rooms are not big, and I'm not the guy. Who was it that their first project was making a set of chairs for a table? You know, you want to make 8 to 10 things.
That was Blake. Yeah.
Yeah, Blake. Yeah. And it, you know, like I don't want to do that. So I'm thinking like literally one chair. Well, you know what I have in my living room? I have one armchair and one couch, and it's only a 12-foot wide room. There's not much else you can shove in it that is not in the walkway already. So it's just like, where could I put this? It might hide in the corner. I don't know, but it also might be 2-3 years out before I actually get the chance to do it. So we'll keep that fire burning. And someday, maybe, hopefully soon, I will.
Have you seen, how far is David Duyard from you? He's in Connecticut.
Connecticut's probably equally, probably more.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's the rough thing. Actually, a guy that was in a class that they just did at at Pennington's school. It wasn't Greg that was teaching it. I forget who was teaching it. But there's a guy there. His handle is Michigan Sloyd.
Oh, yeah.
And he teaches.
Yeah.
I'm not really familiar with him all that well, but I looked him up. And he's 4.5 hours north of me into Michigan. Yeah.
That wouldn't be too bad. He does some good work.
Yeah. And that's on my radar, too. But that's okay. Like where I am is just it's just not a lot of crafting going on. There's not that stuff. You know, you find it in Tennessee. You find it in New England for sure.
Or North Carolina, where Meredith is. She can't throw a rock without getting a couple of chairmakers.
Right. I mean, go down the coast and it's there. I'm like just far enough away, and probably the people west of Ohio have a similar issue, except, you know, who am I thinking? Jeff, ergonomics guy. Why can't I think of his name? Anyway, there's like stuff near Chicago, which is about 4 hours west of me. I'm in a bed. Yeah, Miller.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm in a spot that the nearest thing is at least 4 hours away, you know? So there's that. But
just down the road.
Yeah, we'll see. I gotta, you know, maybe when everybody's in college I can start looking at that a little more seriously. We'll see.
Probably so. Well, you know,
I got a few years.
That's right. Oh well. Well, fantastic. So
yeah, how about you? What do you got going on?
I'm doing a bunch of shipping. So, you know, with all the supply chain issues and all that kind of stuff, finally got, I was waiting on a couple items for a bunch of orders and I got those in this week. So I've been doing nothing but packing boxes and, running to the post office or UPS store. So depending on where stuff is going, because the U.S. Postal Service raised their rates, so some things now are cheaper to ship UPS through U.S. Postal Service. So yeah, it all depends on where it's going. But so I'm kind of juggling back and forth. So yeah, that's mainly what I've been doing, is just doing, you know, the boring stuff of making tools, which is packing and shipping. And it's also the most exhaustive. I mean, I had one guy, I won't divulge his name, but he's just up in Austin, but he ordered everything that I make. And so I was packing that up in a box. And I mean, it took me literally about an hour and a half to get this box packed, you know.
It's just, wow.
All this kind of stuff. And well, I was also trying out a new box dimension to pack everything in to ship. So,
and that's what it's all about.
And this is great podcasting, right? You know, I can talk all about, you know, hey, this type of box versus that type of box, and you know, all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
I was just about to like get into that with you, and I was like, well, we could probably talk about packaging for a long time.
our new pack and ship podcast coming soon.
Yeah.
That actually might be a good idea. Anyway, it's probably already people doing that.
But yeah.
Oh boy.
So yeah, that's about all I've been doing. I think I mentioned last time I'm looking at prototyping some new stuff, and I'm still down that road, and I've ordered all my stuff. It just takes a while for that stuff to get shipped in. And, you know, with all the supply chain issues, how many times am I going to be saying that for the next have I said it? How many times are we all going to be saying it?
But, I don't think we're measuring that in weeks or months. It's more like quarters, if not years. It's going to be a minute. So buckle up. My son actually mentioned today something about, hey, you know, you may want to help me look for a few deals on Black Friday, looking, you know, towards that. And in my mind, I'm like, you're not going to get anything shipped in time, you know?
Yeah.
And what really are you like? And I, my mother-in-law actually was over today, and something about their refrigerators going down. So they went to the store to look for a refrigerator, and no normal brands are even in the store. I mean, we have this incredible tidal wave supply chain issue right now that's affecting everything. So it's going to be a little while till it gets back to semi-normalcy.
Yeah, I got the same issue. I got a refrigerator hanging on just barely. It's working fine, but I think there's a problem with the, what is it? The temperature regulator in the freezer, you know, for the frost free mm-hmm. refrigerators, it turns mm-hmm. on a heating cycle every so often. I think that's all screwed up. So I get a lot of ice accumulation if I keep ice in there, you know, like has an ice maker and stuff. So I said, we're just stopping with the ice maker, because I tried to see if I could get one of those. Yeah, you can't get them anymore for the refrigerator. So,
it'd
be easy enough to replace.
Yeah. Being handy and finding the part is one.
Yeah, thing, exactly. Yeah, so
out of reach, that stuff.
So hopefully it'll hang on for another year or two till things get better. But yeah, same way. I also want a new car too, but yeah, that's going to be another couple of years where I even think about getting a new car.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's, I forgot what it was, but I want to say it was that, I could be totally wrong, but that new Ford Maverick truck that they came out with, I want to say that they're charging like $20,000 over sticker for one of those.
Oh my.
And it's like a $20,000 truck. I mean, you know, the low trim.
The low end. Yeah.
So who knows, but
you need to get anyway. One of those electric trucks.
I think the Maverick, I think it's a hybrid.
It's an electric hybrid, I think. Yeah. Essentially like the Nissan Leaf, that, you know, idea of you get electric to accelerate, you know, petroleum to maintain, and the fuel economy goes into like the 40s and 50s for a decent weight vehicle, but not.
Yeah, they do have that F-150 Lightning that's supposed to be all electric.
I mean, the more we, you know, in a few years, it's going to be kind of crazy. Electric is really, really coming. And I mean, I know a couple of the companies have made the claim that by 2025 or something like that, they're going to be all electric or autonomous or something. I mean, there's a lot of change going on there from traditional
you
know, combustion engines.
Yeah. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for an electric car or something. It's probably what I want. Because I'm never
literally
gonna give up my Tacoma. Yeah,
driving from near Johnson Space Center in Houston to Kyle's place. I think I passed at least four oil refineries, and he's gonna get a electric car. That is just funny.
I got the Tacoma if I need something, you know.
Right. You need something like that. Like I had that thought. Like I'm right now driving a little Traverse. I actually got right before the cars got crazy. In March of this year, I picked up a Traverse.
You could probably sell it for more than
a Trailblazer. I bet I could. It's kind of crazy. But it's a lease, so I'm paying through it. But right now you can't get anything, you know, that's not undersized or oversized. And I'm like, oh, maybe I'll go to a smaller car, but I need something. I abuse these things. I've taken, you know, siding packs when I did my addition in my car. I've had 12-foot treated 2x8s in my car. Like I can't do that in a 4-door sedan. I just can't. Like there's a real need for something that's got some size to it, some bed to it, something. Mm-hmm. We'll see. I've never been a truck guy, but you know, maybe.
You know, we have a minivan and
they're awesome.
It's the best. For furniture and for just life.
We did right up until 2012. We got a Traverse. Up until then, we had minivans and we had two kids. My kids are, you know, freshman in college, sophomore in high school now. So, they've grown. But at the time, like, van was awesome.
Totally
awesome.
And I think almost, you know, there are not that many manufacturers of minivans anymore. But I think almost all of them, you can put a 4x8 sheet of plywood in.
We had an older Odyssey and you couldn't so I've been upgraded to a 2006 or something. And you can, and it's really nice because we've also like slept in the back of it when we're traveling and stuff, so you know, it's pretty good. And like you can transport furniture and you know, take it to clients, and it's safe if it's raining and stuff like that. So
Yeah, I have that Tacoma, and it's been a solid truck for me, but I've thought about maybe, you know, it'd be nice if I had like a van or something like that. And I looked at one of those Connect vans one time. It's like, no, the Tacoma's paid for. It's fine. And, you know, only put maybe 5,000 miles a year on it. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, well, speaking of cars and whatnot. Meredith, what are you working on in the shop?
Well, I just started cutting up wood today for a sideboard for a client. Yep, it's cherry and pretty simple for doors and veneer doors, but nothing. She wanted to keep it pretty simple, so it's just started that, and I just sort of finished up a bunch of small things that I needed to do. So it was like a coffee table for a designer and a lamp and these eave brackets, like these really heavy cypress eave brackets that go under on a house that this it's funny, this local builder has had me do these things, and they're each like, you know, they're 5x5 cypress beams that I have to cut up and join together, and I'm like, okay, this isn't really what I do, but I guess you're paying me by the hour, so sure. So I did a couple of those for him, so
yeah. Yes. How do you like working with cypress? It's not my favorite.
Well, he has me do that because they're going outside.
Yeah, really rough. Exactly, yeah.
But it's fine to work with. It's pretty soft, I guess, if you're thinking of for furniture.
What is the, you need real sharp blades to get through it because it's soft,
it's soft, it's kind of stringy.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, so, that's true.
At least it's not like throwing daggers at you when you're
no, it's nothing like that. It's not splintery or too much anyway, but it is a little stringy. I built a Adirondack chair for a friend of mine out of cypress, and it's held up well. It does well outside. I tried to use it as a cypress as a seat blank back when I was young and inexperienced in chair making, and that was a accomplishment to saddle a cypress seat, but I did it, and the chair is still fine. But it does dent real easy. It's like, you know, like when I was building that Adirondack chair, I swear I had a hot wet rag and an iron in the other hand while I'm building everything, because it was just a mess. It was like, okay, end of the day, time to steam out all the dents.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to peg all these joints, and I'm like hammering in these 5/8 oak dowels, and I would miss somehow occasionally. Yeah. And I'm just like, well, glad this is going 20 feet off the ground. We're going to let it go.
Exactly. Do they keep them natural, or they paint them?
The first house, he kept them natural. I think he's going to paint these current ones. I don't know how often I'm going to do this. I hope it's not too often. It's a lot of heavy lifting.
Yes. I can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, so tell us, how did you enter into this wonderful world of woodworking and all the riches and fame?
It's overwhelming. I went to college for architecture in Minnesota. And so I was kind of on that track. I didn't even think about building things. As I was there, I kind of realized like this is a lot of just drawing and like making something up and telling someone else to build it. And then, you know, being on the computer a lot, and I just felt like I don't know how to do things. I don't feel comfortable telling other people to do it. It was just a difficult leap for me to not understand how things actually come together. So after college, I like decided I was like going to go all hands on. So I worked on a farm. And then I went to a school in Vermont called Yes Tomorrow. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
No.
Yeah. It's great. It's like a design build school. So it focuses more on architecture, but they have furniture classes too, and they have like permaculture and that kind of thing too. So it's a variety, but it's really cool. And I spent a year like working in town and taking classes, and it was really fun. I took like a timber framing class. I was like, oh, I really like carpentry and stuff, but it's also very cold or it's hot. You know, it's like when you're doing that kind of work, you're either, so you're really cold or really hot or whatever, or things are heavy. I didn't know about North Bennett, but I happened to find it. I moved back home with my parents in Kansas City. And when I was at home, my dad and I joined the Kansas City Woodworkers Guild. Yeah, which is like this great place. The membership is like, I don't know, maybe it's gone up since now, but it was, I think it was like $75 a year. And you could use the shop whenever you wanted.
Yeah, they got an incredible shop, too.
Yeah, it's amazing. There were classes and... they would do have speakers come through, so that was really great because then we were able to make some projects, which actually still have one of them at my house here, so you know it stuck with me. But that was really fun because it was a good way to know that I think I still like this. So then when I started North Bennett, I just jumped right in and was fully immersed for 2 years, and that's the rest is history.
That's awesome. I mean, the opportunity to go to Bennett Street is so kind of life forming, from everyone that I've talked to that's gone through it. That is so cool.
Yeah. Now, did you met Evan there at North Bennett?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. So were y'all in the same years or was one of y'all ahead of the other?
Same semester.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if I remember right, I think he said that y'all were in the old school and then transitioned to the new one or something like that.
Yeah. Which was got to do both. Like get the new shiny new one. But yeah, I feel lucky about that because they're both great, and then they both have their downsides and their perks. So.
Yeah,
we got to experience all of that.
So after you graduated North Bennett Street, then the work just came flowing in, right?
Yeah, no problem at all. So we moved down to North Carolina because, Evan has family or his sister lives around here.
Okay.
And he had been coming here because she went to college down here, too. So he kind of knew the area. And we were like, well, we don't want to be in Boston. I mean, I love it there, but there's a lot of woodworkers there and cost of living is high. So came down here and we're trying to find what to do, like trying to find we actually have an open space. So we basically what we had to do was like work for those guys for the first few months or 6 months maybe. Mm-hmm. Part-time building like kitchen cabinets and stuff, which I didn't know how to do, so that was very good education. I didn't even know how to use like an orbital sander and like a biscuit joiner. I know. We do use machines at North Bennett, like they definitely teach you all that, but like certain things I didn't grow up doing this stuff, so I didn't have any of that basic knowledge. So that was good. It was sort of like humbling and like start at ground zero on certain things. And I also took up another job, a part-time job at this furniture shop in not too far away from here. And so that and then working for the cabinet guys were just good ways to make money and like learn how to do the business or at least observe it. And then both of us like slowly got clients in one way or another. Like someone would come into the shop and everyone else was busy and they'd have a project of some sort. Really like funny, weird stuff sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like a good way to practice pricing and, figuring out like what it even means to have a business. Like how do we do anything official? Like how does this start? And like invoicing stuff like that. So it was very organic. And that was good because we were never.
Yeah. So North Bennett Street, do they do anything as far as the business side of furniture?
They kind of do. I don't know what they do now, but when I was there, they would do this sort of 6 week once a week seminar, I guess. So they'd have other graduates or craft business people come in and like talk about their business and how they do it. But it was not, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know how you would teach this, honestly. but there wasn't really anything that was like, here's what you need to do. Step 1 through 10. And so we are very lost. I mean, I'm still kind of confused. we're technically, we've just became an LLC in this past year, but, you know, we're like, well, I guess if we're a sole proprietor, we don't really have to do anything particular. But yeah, I mean, it would have been good to know about like sales tax or.
right. Wow.
Yeah, all that stuff that I don't know. I guess you just have to work. You just have to figure it out. But it does feel important.
Yeah. You don't want the state tax people coming knocking on your door.
Hey. I know. It'd be kind of sad though. Like really, you're coming after me. okay, here's $10.
Yeah, exactly.
But yes, it's been a learning experience in many ways.
Oh yeah, it always is. It always is, and you end up spending so much time doing the business side and not the woodworking side, mm-hmm. and the marketing side, and yeah,
and the shipping side. Oh,
and the shipping side. Yes. So tell us a little bit about your design philosophy. So I've been looking at your portfolio and everything that you have here, and it's just outstanding work. Where do you attribute your design style, I guess? Is it I assume you lean a lot on your architectural background there, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I do in any deliberate way. I think, you know, I don't necessarily have a like words exactly for my philosophy, but I think what a lot of it comes from is like going to North Bennett and getting that classical education.
Mm-hmm.
Because before that, I didn't really find traditional work all that interesting, which I think is probably pretty common for people to go there.
Yeah.
But then you're there for like a year and you're like, oh my gosh, look at this Chippendale chair. It's amazing. So what it really ends up being for me is that I like that a lot of those, you know, American traditional works and elements, but then I tend to strip them down a little bit. So it's got that contemporary feel, but it calls to those, you know, nice details. So it's, you know, I mean, it really depends too on like the clients, what they want. So a lot of that is infused. But I think at this point there is kind of a thread of my work. And it's, I guess the philosophy is just visual.
Yeah. Now, one thing I don't see a lot of woodworkers tackling, and you seem to have a lot of examples of it, is actually lighting, whether it be desk lamps or floor lamps or whatnot. That's really interesting. And those are gorgeous designs that you have there.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I do have a few of those, and I really think I should get on that and do more, because that's just a great way to explore design.
Yeah.
You know, they can be small, but just really effective.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those, like, they're just fun, like the turned lamps. There's a lot of, like, fun elements you can do with that. But with just a very small amount of wood and simple joint, the base maybe or whatever. And then those like tripod, I just finished a tripod lamp. Thing about those is that they're kind of wasteful of wood. So I'm trying to like work on another way of doing something similar.
Yeah. I was about to say that, because I go, yeah, the lamps really don't require that much wood. But then I saw the tripod lamp and I was like, yeah, that's a little bit different, isn't it?
It is, I know, and it's too bad, because I do get orders for that, like, kind of the most frequently
Oh, but it's a stunning piece, and I could imagine. Have you built any smaller versions? Because it looks like something that could scale up and down pretty easily.
Oh, it could. Yeah. Well, some of those table lamps at the bottom of my website, there's kind of the working with that three-way joint with pieces of wood that could be scraps. You know, that's kind of that's kind of what I want lamps to be. It's like, how can I make this cool scrap into something beautiful and usable? But yeah, I would, and I'd like to work in lighting more, so that timbre lamp I have, it's on my website.
Oh yeah, that's a gorgeous little piece. Yeah.
Yeah, and I did that at school, just sort of, you know, I was like, I want to learn timbres, although that doesn't move, but just like the process of making the strips and putting the paper on it. And I like how it's integrated, like the lamp and the shade are all one, you know, so it's
right.
It's definitely something I would love to explore more and work on more. It's just the whole push and pull of having clients other work, but it's really fun. I mean, I think there's so much, I mean, you could go any which way with lighting.
Yeah, and I think that's something that's not explored that much in woodworking, is lamps and stuff. I mean, you've seen some of it, but it's not something that's constant. I mean, I guess there are some gorgeous sculpted lamps that a lot of the, I guess, quote unquote, mid-century modern and more modern furniture makers did, but you just don't see a lot of that nowadays, I don't think.
No, and I mean, from maybe some turn bases, you know, and then I have I'm kind of remembering some wood magazine thing probably used some oak, you know, dimensional lumber to make some sort of bent arm thing that you had to drill a hole through to put wiring through, you know, nothing pretty, but, you know, yeah, there's really art and style to doing something like that. I mean, that's often probably not thought about or overlooked otherwise.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And plus lighting usually goes for a good markup too.
Yeah.
Just saying. No.
I know. It's definitely the next frontier, I'd say.
So one of the things that that I saw that I was really intrigued by is your plant stand trio.
Oh yeah.
Those are really some unique designs, and yeah, I could see that as a plant stand or a bar stool.
Totally.
Yeah. So that is really unique. And, you know, that's one of the things I noticed in you know, not all your work, but at least some of it is you do spend a lot of time on turned features. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I know, it's funny, like turning is such a useful skill. And I really don't consider myself a very good turner at all. It's, you know, it's so scary. Like you can mess it up so fast. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It's like the more I know, the more I'm like, I should be careful.
I keep a cracked unfinished bowl purely because of that. I mean, smart, got thin, got a little wobbly and shattered on me, flew off the lathe, and I still have it. It's up there on the shelf.
Oh, that's, and, yeah, that's so dramatic.
No damage done physically, but it's a lesson, and I'll internally never forget it.
Yeah. Emotional damage. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know. I mean, it's like you're trying to do a little bead, and then you got confident and like shunk it out.
Now it's a cove.
Yeah. It's a cove.
Anytime I see people, and I know that sometimes they're being goofy, sometimes they're showing off, but they do like the one-handed, I'm just gonna like do this and look away from it, kind of drawing a blade to a spinning. I'm like, oh boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a useful skill, and I love using like spindle turning in my work, and you can see it in a lot of places. But it's always a little bit like, okay, you know, psych yourself up. You can do this. You've done it before. Just be, you know. But I love it. I mean, I'm just, I don't know. You had Ailey on here, right? Ailey Bazzari?
Yep.
Yeah. He lives near us. And he was like using the skew going uphill a little bit, which like,
you're right.
I was like, well, did you just do that? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah.
you know, it's it becomes like an extension of your body if you, if that's what you do all the day.
Have you ever seen him make his little baby rattlers?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like what, 2 minutes?
Oh, I know.
Rattle, and I mean, these things are pretty complicated. It's just like zip, 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 yep. zip.
Anytime I see, crazy. I mean, and obviously you get very comfortable with a tool, but I've only used a skew, very few times, and I'm afraid of them because they can catch so quickly. But to see people that can just go zoop, zoop, and they just like separate a ring right off a spindle and it's captive in there and like, whoa, like it is right there on the razor's edge of failure the entire time. You know it, but they're just like, and just zip right through.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an adrenaline sport.
yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah. I'm like at the point, it's like, I know how to do it enough that I can use it for my work. You know, not the skew, but like just turning in general. And it's sort of like a lot of these things. Like I have a lot of knowledge enough that I can get through a project and make something. I'm not like an expert. I wouldn't say I'm an expert in any of these things. It's like I just know how to do a lot of stuff pretty well. and that goes a long way, you know.
So yes.
But, you know, there's points where I'm like, man, I wish I was way better at everything. mm-hmm. But you know, I guess I got some time ahead of me, maybe.
Oh yeah, but you know, you're doing exceptional work. I really the other piece I really wanted to compliment you on is I love that day bed.
Thanks.
The Buchanan day bed, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also one that gets a lot of orders actually, mostly from designers. I'm on First Dibs. Are either of you on that?
No, but I know. Yeah, I've been to the site, but yeah, right. I'm not on it.
Yeah, and I don't get a ton of orders. I'll get maybe a handful a year, but this one has proven to be popular. And it's nice. I mean, it's nice to have a project since I'm usually custom. It's nice to have something I've done before.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can just be like, okay, I know what to do exactly. Yes. I don't have to think through everything on this one. And it seems to be a solid design that people gravitate towards. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now when you have projects like that that you have built a few times, are you following the same steps or... Me, when I do a lot of repetitive stuff, building the same thing. And every time I'm building one of my jigs or something, I'm going, okay, let me try to do it this way. I think this way is a little faster. This way is a little bit more easier to do or something like that. I'm constantly changing my process, which is probably not a great thing to do, but it seems to work. It seems to work for me, at least. I keep refining and refining and refining the steps I go through on stuff I build all the time.
Yeah, I do that a little bit too. I have certain things. I'm trying to think with that one. I think I did all the dovetails completely hand cut the first time, but with that long rail, it was really difficult because I couldn't put it upright. So I've done the tails on the table saw, changed that, and I've changed my jigs for. There's a substructure underneath that that's got it's like either poplar or maple dovetailed into the rails, like a lighting dovetail, I guess. So just remaking those jigs to make those work. Little refinements. I don't go overboard trying to change things with that just because, like I said, it's like the one time I get to not go to think too hard.
You said something interesting. So you do dovetails on the table saw?
Yeah, if I can. I mean, certain things.
Yeah, so do you have one of those Pekovich blades that are ground at a certain...
No.
Okay.
No, that sounds great. what that sounds like to me is a challenge of, like, you have to get your blade on the perfect angle.
Yes, right. Yes. I think he has, I forget... But, you know, but yeah, all the dovetails he does are at a certain degree. And so he had a, I guess, I forgot who it was. I think it was the forest people. They'll do a custom ground on the blade so he can hit that angle every time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think if we were doing dovetails like every single project, you know, I would consider that. What we do now, I just will angle the blade and chisel out the shoulder. Yeah. But it really does help. I just made a small little thing for a friend as like a gift, and I was like, I'll just do the all hand cut dovetails this time. And I was like, oh man, this takes a long time. This is like hard. My hand is tired. They turned out fine, but yeah. I was like, you know, I do enjoy the fact that I can do this all. And I end up always doing the pins by hand. I'm not to that point where I can have it all figured out on the saw, but just, you know, a little help from my friend the table saw. Never hurt anybody.
Well, exactly.
The saw, but
well, yeah. Yeah, no dovetails were harmed.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, so you talked a little bit about clients. So who primarily are your clients at this point in time? Are you said you're working with some designers. Is that most of your work, or is it actual working for the end user, so to speak?
Oh, yeah, it mostly is the end user.
Okay.
And it's mostly local, or regional. Yeah, when I work with designers, that is typically through either First Dibs, or they might have found me in one way or another. And those are usually out of state. But for the most part, it's people who are just in this area, because we're in this, what's called the Triangle. It's Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. So there's a lot of people here. Mm-hmm. And like, it's, there's a decent client base here. So we haven't, neither of us have really done any advertising or marketing, in any significant way, as far as I can think of. We've had stuff in a gallery here and stuff like that, but mostly it's just word of mouth, I guess, or they find our websites. And
no, well, that's great.
Yeah, I know. It is really nice because we are not good at that kind of thing. So any free marketing, I guess, is ideal. But yeah, it tends to be people with homes, and they've got a certain thing that they need. They'll come to us, you know, well, yeah. They'll come to usually one or the other of us, and they might have like a really specific idea of what they want, or it's really vague and they want you to give them some ideas. So
now, do you and Evan work on any projects together, or is it like, get out of my way, I got stuff to do?
Yeah, no, we don't. Not really.
Okay.
Which I like it that way. Because it's like, we're already in the same room all day. We don't need to like also collaborate on everything. But yeah. We do help each other a lot in making decisions and designs and stuff like that. But if something comes in the door, like, neither of us are overly competitive about like getting certain jobs. So we've often shared clients. We've had clients who want multiple things, and they'll have like recently I did a bed for a client. He did a desk and a chest of drawers. So it's nice to represent both of us in one house. But
yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Yeah, it works out, and clients often become friends too. So. It's fun that way. We get to revisit our old projects.
Make sure they're
still together.
Yes, that is super cool. So so tell us a little bit, Nana. You've also done some teaching here recently, correct?
Yeah, that has it's been a new thing. But yeah, I have started to do that. I taught in Florida at the Florida School of Woodwork in March, and that was my first time teaching. And then I taught again in early September at Mark Adams School of Woodwork. in Indiana. So that was my second time. And then I'm going to be teaching again at Florida in March. And then I'm going to do the same class, which is a nightstand class, at the Austin School of Furniture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
October.
Just
next
up the road from me.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah.
Up the road in Texas is at least 4 hours away.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah, you're about right. It's about 4 hours. Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
But no, that's really cool. I mean, so you found the teaching bug? You're liking that?
Well, you know, I do like it. I wasn't sure if I would, because it's, you know, it's kind of nerve-wracking and not like I'm kind of a shy person and like you got to stand up there and talk and mm-hmm. be the center of it all for at least, you know, some part of it every day. So it was a little scary, but really, really fun. Like, that's what it turns out to be. It's like you get to hang out with people who are really excited to be there. You know, I've talked about it before. It's like I'm not like going to teach English or math or something, you know. People really want to be here and they want to learn and they're just excited about anything. So as long mm-hmm. as you don't teach them something terrible, like it's gonna be okay. So so far it's gone well.
Yeah, well, tell us about a little bit about the classes, especially the upcoming ones that you're teaching.
Yeah, so they've kind of been in the style of the classes I've taught are the nightstand, the mm-hmm. Glen Hill nightstand, and the wall cabinet. I guess I called it the North End wall cabinet. But the nightstand are the two classes coming up in Florida and in Austin. And it's a great project. I mean, it's intense what you can do in a week, because I usually would take longer than that to make these. But what I like about these for teaching is that there's a lot of skills packed into them. And I realize that people don't necessarily retain everything, but they get the idea of elements, how many elements you can put together. So I like to teach something that has a lot of different things that you could scatter about on other projects. So there's like the cove cuts on the table saw, which is the underside of the top. There's dovetails, but you can't see them. So if you mess them up royally, you can just, they're gone forever. but you get the process. And I've changed the design a little bit so that we did house tapered dovetails for the connection between the sides and the top.
Okay,
So that's a really fun and unique joint. And then with the drawers on these, I did rabbited and pinned instead of dovetail, just to get another joint in there. And they're hung drawers, so that's kind of fun. And there's curves on this base. Like, it's kind of intense. I'm like, it's like, are you sure? Can we really do this? And Kate at Florida School of Woodwork is like, we'll just get them as far as we can. And everyone did get them together. It was you know, midday Saturday after five and a half days, but, you know, in various degrees of finish, but, you know, it is possible. It's very exhausting, but teaching is really fun. I mean, I found it to be really energizing. So that was good, because it's gets me out of the shop too, you know, go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And those are some fantastic locations to visit to. Austin's great.
Yeah.
And I have not been to the Florida School of Woodwork, but I hear Kate's got quite the operation there. So.
Oh, yeah. And she's great. I mean, I was there in March, so it was really beautiful there, just like spring already. And she was like just great for being a first time teacher. She was just very easygoing and supportive and just like, you're going to be fine. And how can I help? And then also not hovering, you know, she didn't, you know, wait and see if I needed anything all the time, you know, it's just the right amount, you know? but it was fun. I mean, I think teaching really helps me think about what I'm doing, because I don't even know why I do some things. And then someone asks, I'm like, I guess I have an answer, but I didn't realize it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've never taught a class or anything of that nature. Don't know if I ever will, but everybody that does go, oh, I'll learn almost as much from the students as they learn from me.
Oh, it's so true. Yeah, you have to stay humble because people have ideas and they're good ones, you know? Yeah. I'm like, oh, we should do it that way. What am I doing here?
You're right.
Yeah. Damn it.
Yeah. Man, I didn't think of that. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been pretty cool.
Well, that's great. Well, fantastic. And so when are you going to be in Austin?
I think mid-October next year.
Oh, okay. Next year. Good.
Right around now. Yeah.
Good. Well, I just, you know, in neither one of those places you want to be anywhere between, say, July and through September.
I tried to be deliberate about that.
Yep. I will be only in what would be otherwise considered winter in the northeast, northwest, going to Texas, then it might be tolerable.
Yeah.
Well, Austin School of Furniture, they did move into a new facility, and I think this one's actually air-conditioned. Before, it's about half the facility was air-conditioned. So, you know, if you're working on with the machinery, you're outside, you know, with big fans and whatnot. But, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, y'all got to go through it.
Exactly. Well, so tell us a little bit. I guess you told us a little bit about the shop and you and Evan kind of working together and just collaborating on problem solving, not so much on projects. So that's great. But tell us a little bit about the shop that you have there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's super nice. It's like a mile and a half from our house. We can bring our dog. These are important things.
Oh, cool. Nice.
But it's about 2,000 square feet. We rent that space from our landlord who owns, you know, he owns a whole building and he has a cabinet shop in the rest of the building.
Okay.
So, and he works there. So he's always around were anything to go wrong. And he's just really nice. So that's always good. We've got a full machine room and then a separate bench room. So that's also very nice for sound.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these machines, like I have to give Evan all the credit for finding and tuning up and generally maintaining. I try a little bit, but that stuff's just not my bag. But we did restore like a bandsaw, like our Tanowitz.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because what we did when we worked at that shared shop before, we bought some machines while we were still renting and like had other jobs and stuff and slightly lower overhead. And that was a good way to like, you know, practice buying things how to find good stuff and fixing them up over time so that we didn't have to go buy everything all at once when we moved to this new place. So. It's just really nice. It's a comfortable space. There's enough flex room where we can fill it up with stuff that's in progress or done. And then once that's out, we have space to start cutting stuff up again. So it's really nice.
So does the cabinet shop have a big wide belt sander?
Yes.
Okay.
Super convenient.
That you can borrow from time to time.
just right outside the door. Very helpful. And they have a spray booth, which neither of us spray too much anymore. We kind of tried that for a while, but if we needed to, that's available. And they also have a CNC, which we wouldn't use personally, but we could have them do something if we needed to. So it's like, I just don't want anything to change. Like our situation is really nice. So.
Or you could be like Daryl Peart, which he doesn't use the CNC machine for too much of his work. I think a little bit now, but he primarily got it to do jigs with.
That's nice.
So he can get all his jigs in place, but I think he's at now actually incorporating when we interviewed him. That's primarily why he got the CNC, is to get all his jigs straight so he could, you know, have those. And actually I think he had some intention doing some stuff that he could sell jig wise. But then I think he's actually now starting to incorporate it into his workflow. So he's actually doing some of his pieces on that.
Oh, I could totally see how that would, you would move into that. Cause
yeah. Yeah.
Like, oh, what if I could just make this thing, you know, curved in three directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be super nice. It's kind of a daunting thing to imagine figuring out how to use one.
Oh yeah. Like,
paying someone else to do it is always nice though. Mm-hmm. yeah. It's useful to have around. I've had them like flatten a slab before.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I will pay for that. That's okay. Yeah. I don't need to do that.
That's for the line of river tables you have, right?
You know it. Got a long line.
Yes, yes. Well, anyway, so what's next for you? What do you got coming up besides anything else that you want to promote or?
Oh, I guess it's really just those classes.
Okay.
Yeah. Think about that. I would say those two classes, the one in March and October.
Yeah, so you got the Florida School of Woodwork in Tampa, so that's in March, and then basically a year from now in October you'll have the Austin School of Woodwork.
Yeah.
And who knows, you might have something in between those.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know.
Yeah, so stay tuned, and we'll get how people can stay tuned and find out what you're up to in just a second. But before we do that, let's move on to our fortnightly beer choices.
Yeah.
So I am just sampling Carbock products. I happened to pick up the Tailgater pack, which was an 18 pack of beer that just has all sorts of Carbock, and I like Carbock. They're a local brewery, craft brewery, until they got bought out by, what is it, the ABEV or something like that?
Yeah, somebody.
Yeah. So I don't know if they're available nationwide now or worldwide now, but
I haven't seen it, so it hasn't come up this far yet. But
yeah,
but I did enjoy someone that was down there. Carbock, so a good Texas beer.
Yeah. But so I'm enjoying a little Hopadillo IPA, Crawford Bock, which that's a nod to the Astros, and they have the Horseshoe Pilsner. Haven't got that one yet, but and I did have the Viva Chilla, which is one of those lime based beers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. And it's nice. It was refreshing. So that's what I'm dipping my toes into. So, what are you drinking there?
It's Halloween time ish, and
yes,
I went looking, and I was overwhelmed by the Christmas beers and brews that were already in the store. It's getting as bad as Hobby Lobby and department stores at this point. That you got to get it like a season ahead, you know, to get the stuff. But I haven't
It's the supply chain issues, you know.
Oh, God.
You gotta do Christmas shopping earlier. We gotta get the beer earlier.
I guess. But I did find it's an Ohio brewery, Fatheads Brewery. Mm-hmm. I've been in one of their tap houses. They've got a couple around the Cleveland area. And they have an Imperial pumpkin ale they call Spooky Tooth. And it's good. It's good. I mean, it's a pumpkin beer. It's Imperial. It comes in 8% ish. So it's a little heavy.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But wow. it's a good one. Little sweet, little pumpkin, it's probably yam. You know, most of these things fake themselves by not putting actual pumpkins in them. But a gourd is a gourd is a gourd, I suppose. And it's pretty good. Meredith, how about you? How are you imbibing yourself this evening?
Well, I have New Belgium Voodoo Ranger.
Oh, okay. That's a classic.
Yes. That's a good one.
Juicy Haze IPA.
Mm-hmm.
Just what was in the fridge. Pretty good. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, good. Yeah.
Oh, it's 7.5%. So I guess I'm
with you. See, you're not far behind. You thought I was high.
Well,
you're like, oh.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, Sean hadn't been hitting the double IPAs here for a couple episodes. I'm sure it's coming up.
Yeah, yeah. No, you know what I do have? I was at Costco a couple weeks ago and I got the advent calendar of beer. So
oh,
that's just a treasure trove of high ABV German cans. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it always is. Exactly. Mm. Well, fantastic. Well, so Meredith, where can folks find you on the interwebs?
Well, I have a website. It's just MeredithHartFurniture.com. That's also my Instagram name. And I guess that's probably it.
Okay. Well, great. Great. Kyle, and it is a great website that you have there too. I forgot to mention that earlier, but yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, all the photo cred goes to Evan's sister.
Who's, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Really, really
which
good.
We can't the family, hire that's because pretty she, cool.
Because y'all just twist her arm. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Pretty nice.
Yeah. That is nice. That is nice. Well, so
on to you, man. What do you? Where?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You can always find me at Barton.Kyle on Instagram or Kyle Barton on YouTube. Sean, what about yourself?
I'm SeanW78 on most social media platforms. And that'll lead us right into reviews. And this week, we've got a review from a prior guest of the show, Anthony Moraes, Chef Moraes on Instagram. And about the, what episode was that? The TWF episode?
Texas Woodworking Festival.
Oh, yeah. And he just said, great episode, Kyle. Well done. You know, yeah. Did all that work down there when you were at the Texas Woodworking show. As well, we have another one from at @swell_furniture on the Kyle Kidwell episode. He said, hey, really good session, fellas. Thanks for the great show. And we love to hear this. I mean, good, bad, or otherwise, we love feedback. And we'll mention you on these shows if you give us feedback. So feel free to comment wherever you find us on your podcatcher, on Apple Music on or podcasts, wherever the hell they're on anymore, or on our Patreon, give us some feedback and we'll take it to heart no matter what it is. Thank you very much.
And that just about wraps it up for this show. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the show on the podcatcher of your choice. Just search for the Modern Woodworkers Association. And while you're there, please leave us a review. You can follow us on Instagram at @MWA_podcast. And if you'd like to support the podcast, go over to patreon.com/MWA podcast. But the best thing you can do is tell a friend. Word of mouth goes a long way in sharing our discussion.